Okay, today's daf is Avodah Zarah daf Yud. We left off in daf Tes Amud Beis. We were doing a lot of cheshbonos yesterday of how we know how to count the amount of years from the time of the Churban Habayis, from the time of Malchus Yavan. And just one last note in terms of cheshbonos the Gemara is going to make. We're about 7-8 lines before the end of the page. On Tes Amud Beis, Amar Rabbi Chanina, Achar Arba Meos L'Churban Habayis, L'Churban Habayis, if once you hit the point 400 years past the Churban Habayis, Im Yom L'Cha Adam, Kach Sad if someone offers you a deal to buy a field that's worth 1,000 dinar, and he offers you to buy it for 1 dinar, don't buy the field. It's not worth the purchase. Masnisa Tana, we learned in the Braisa, Achar Arba'as Alafim Umasayim Ushloshim V'Achas Shana L'Brias Olam, that not 400 years after the Churban Habayis, but rather after 4,231 years from the Brias HaOlam, Im Yom El Chadam Kach Chasad Shava Elef Dinarim B'Dinar Echad Al Tikach. That's where you should turn down. That at that point in time, you should start turning down such a deal to buy a field that's worth 1,000 dinar for a single dinar. So, my binai, what's the difference between 400 years after the Churban Habayis and 4,231 years from Brias HaOlam? Is there any difference in terms of when that time actually is? Says the Gemara, Ika binai, there's a 3-year difference that the Braisa actually adds 3 more years, right? The according to the Braisa, the Gullus is going to last, the earliest time where we could assume that Mashiach is about to come is going to last 3 extra years, because we said before that 172 years after the Churban is the end of the 4,000 years from Brias HaOlam. So 4,231 plus, so it's 4,231, so if you add 231 to 172, you get, what's the math? You get 403. So 403 years after the Churban is when we hit the year 4,231 from the Brias HaOlam. So that's a difference of 3 years. Now, why is it that you should turn down such a deal? Still sounds like a good deal. For a dinar, what's so wrong with buying a field for a dinar, even if you're expecting Mashiach? So Rashi says, because chaval on the dinar, because the Mashiach is going to come today, and it's going to be a waste of money. You're never going to get to enjoy the field, so that 1 dinar is going to be a total waste of money. The Ritva says different, though. The Ritva says that it's not chaval on the dinar in that sense, that Mashiach is going to come today. If we've reached this point, says the Ritva, and Mashiach has not yet come, then you know that it's a time of Piranus for Klal Yisrael, that we've done some very terrible things. And it's likely whatever field you buy is not going to be successful anyway. Whatever investments you make aren't going to be successful. So according to the Ritva, it's a much more negative view. It's not that Mashiach is going to come any second, and therefore there's no reason to spend any money. Adrabba, it's that Mashiach obviously isn't coming and bad things are happening, so don't make new investments now, because those investments are not going to pay you off. Now the Shar Mitzvah Balachavir quotes the Bnei Yisaschar. Bnei Yisaschar says, come on, how are we supposed to live life like this? You should never be allowed to buy lunch, because by the time you're about to start eating, Mashiach maybe came already, and then you're going to have to run and you're going to miss out on, and what did you spend the $5 on the pizza and the soda for? I mean, it's ain't the davar sof if you're gonna say like this. And he says, besides for that, what value is the dinar going to have for you if Mashiach actually does come? You're really going to need that dinar? We're going to have whatever we need. We're going to have everything's going to be taken care of. So what do we really need that dinar for? So the Bnei Yisaschar understands completely differently. He says, it's not a chisaron in emuna if we go and we make investments and we live life normally. If you sign a 1-year lease on an apartment or a house or something, it's none of those things are considered a chisaron in emuna. He says, the situation is, why is a guy offering you a field that's worth 1,000 dinar for 1 dinar? So says Bnei Yisaschar, he's trying to make fun of you. He's trying to mock the religion. He's trying to say, oh, you guys really believe in Mashiach? Yeah, what if I were to offer you this field that's 1,000 dinars for 1 dinar? So says Bnei Yisaschar, then you should take a stand and say, you know what? We do believe in it, and I'm going to turn down such an offer. I mean, you should show just how much that we actually do believe in it. But it doesn't mean that you actually have to live life regularly like this on a normal basis. You don't have to live life like Shragi, there's a Gemara over there. you don't have to normally live life like this. That's how the Bnei Sascha says. Okay, says the Gemara, the last line on Tassamid Beis. There was a shtar that said 6 extra years in the shtar. Meaning, Rashi explains on the top of Yiram Ra'alif, let's say it was the 500 years since the establishment of the Greek dynasty, and it said in the shtar 506 years. It would be the equivalent of if we had a shtar today that said Tafshin Ayin Vav. So it's strange because the shtar is written for a date that is 6 years in the future. So they didn't know what to do with this shtar. Sav Rabban Kamei de Rabbi Lemeimar Hai Shtar Meucharu. So the Rabban originally thought to say that this is a shtar meuchar, that they specifically post dated the shtar, and that was a way of the Malva being mochel the shibud karkaos of those 6 years. Meaning, if anyone buys land from the Lova within these 6 years, the Malva loses the right to go and collect from that land because the shtar is dated 6 years later. That's the assumption. That's how Rashi explains of what the status of a shtar mu'uchar is going to be. In the Tshuvas Nod B'Yehuda, Madura Kama, Choshemishmat, Simen Yud, the son of the Nod B'Yehuda wants to suggest that when you have a shtar mu'uchar, the Lova doesn't have to pay until the post-date, until the date that's actually written in the shtar. And the Debuta says, no, that's not true. The chiyuv to pay is right away. The chiyuv to pay is like any other shtar. The mu'uchad, making the date a later date, doesn't change when the zman ha-piraon is going to be. All it changes is the shibud karkaos. All it changes is whether there's going to be a shibud on land that the lova sells in the interim. If he doesn't pay and you have to go and he doesn't have money and you have to go and collect from the chasim shubadim, that's where the mu'uchar helps. And he says it's meduyuk in Rashi that way, because our Gemara talks about a shtar mu'uchar and Rashi starts talking about shibud karkaos. And why doesn't Rashi say, no, the value of it being mu'uchar is that you don't have to pay it for another 6 years? So you see, a shtar mu'uchar primarily is about the shibud karkaos. Based on this, he answers the kasha of the shach on the Beis Yosef. Beis Yosef quotes from the Bala Trumos that if someone's motzi ishtar mu'uchar al chavero, you don't have to pay until the zman in the shtar. And the Shach says, what are you quoting from the Bala Trumos? It's enough from the Gemara. Why do you have to quote such a halacha from the Bala Trumos? It's a beferish a Gemara. So that's what he wants to suggest. Maybe what the Bala Trumos is trying to be mechadesh is not only that the shibud karkaos extends, but it also that the zman apiro extends, and that is certainly something that that one could argue with. In fact, the Nod B'Yehuda does argue with that idea. Okay, says the Gemara Viter. So they said, okay, this is a shtar mu'uchar. So what do you do with the shtar mu'uchar? Ni akve ad matya zimnei velo tarif. Let's hang on to it until the zman of the shtar is up, and until then you can't be toreif, meaning you can't take away from lekuchos, you can't collect nechasim shubadim. Amr Rav Nachman heard this, he said, no, you're making a big mistake. Hai safra dukno kasve. This was written by a sofer who was being very precise, and he was writing today's date, today's year. He wasn't writing 6 years in the future. V'hanach shishnin demolchu be'elam, da'anan lo chashvinilu hu kachashv le'i b'zmanei kasve. How is he dating the shtar? From the time of the Malchus Yavan. We discussed yesterday, when does Malchus Yavan begin? So we pointed out that Malchus Yavan, that the Malchus Yavan began after 34 years from the time the Beis HaMikdash was built. Yet we only start counting Malchus Yavan 40 years after the Beis HaMikdash was built. Why? Because the first 6 years of Malchus Yavan, they weren't yet completely in control of that much. They were only Molech in Elam, and because of that, we didn't count the first 6 years. So says Rav Nachman, this sofer obviously didn't get the memo, and he counted those first 6 years. So when he wrote the year 6 years later, it wasn't 6 years later, it was this year, he just started counting the Malchus Yavan from when they really originally took over the Malchus. The Tanya Rabbi Yossi Yomer, Sheishana Malchu Be'elam, V'achar Kach Pashto Malchus HaMakol HaOlam Kulo. First they had 6 years in Elam, and then the Malchus spread out over Kol HaOlam Kulo. Says Tosus, very important Halach L'maisa. Tosus says, Mikan Yesh L'Hachshir Shtar Shedileg Bo Asofer L'Brias Olam. Let's say you have a shtar, a ksuba, a get, anything, where you date the shtar, and you write so many years, L'Brias HaOlam. That's the way you normally write in the shtar. We count the years, and and we show that we're not counting from Malchus Yavan, we're not counting from any other notable event, we're counting from Brias HaOlam. What if you leave out the word, the Brias HaOlam? So how am I supposed to know? It's Tafshin Ayin from what? So does that passel the Shtar? Tosla says, no, you see from our Gemara that it doesn't passel the Shtar. And not only that, Vafilu Dilek HaAlafim Vameos, Raksha Kasam Bekach Bekach Leprat. Even if you leave out the thousands and the hundreds, you just write it's the year 70. You don't write 5,700. You leave out the first two columns. Shari b'imeyim ayukosu l'malchus yavanim, because in those days they would count not to Brias HaOlam but to the Malchus Yavan, v'asofer dilgo. And in this story in the Gemara, obviously the sofer left out that detail. Diava kasav b'shtar behedil malchus yavanim, mayavakamer dilmi liyitzias mitzrayim. Because if in fact he had written the Malchus Yavanim, then the Gemara's next question, which we haven't seen yet, where the Gemara is going to say, how do you even know that he was counting to the Malchus Yavanim? Maybe he was counting to some other date. It wouldn't be a kasha if it would have said in the Shtar what he was counting to. So you see, you don't have to say in the Shtar, as long as it's an accepted practice. That's what everyone does. Everyone writes Shtaras nowadays, they count to Brias HaOlam. So you don't have to write L'Brias HaOlam. It's obvious that you're counting L'Brias HaOlam. That's the important Chiddush Lalach of Tosos. It's Paschal that way in Shulchan as well, that if you leave out the Brias HaOlam, it's still going to be a valid shtar. Yeah.
No, we count. You know, when we say it's Tavshin, you know, Tavshin Ayin, we don't say the five. We don't say Hey Tavshin. You know, nobody says.
Well, when we write a shtar, we do. Chameshus Halafim. If you write a Ksuba, right, we do say the five. But again, Tosla says it's not Ma'akev. It's certainly kosher without it. And that's also proof from the Gemara's connection to Gemara's Kasha of why we don't count from Yitzias Mitzrayim, which we'll see in just a second. In Shor Mitzrayim Balach, he quotes that the Nachla Shiva says in the name of the Mari Mintz that we write in Shtaros, like in Ksuba, L'minyan Shanu Monin Kan. What does that phrase mean? L'minyan shanu monim kan, based on the numbers that we are counting here, as opposed to what? Well, apparently they used to count to Malchus Yavan, they would count to different Malachim, so L'minyan shanu monim kan is to make it very clear that we're following our minhag of counting to the Brias HaOlam. But there are other types of minyan also, there are other ways to count the shtaros. That's what that phrase in the shtar, you ever hear a ksuba being read under the chuppah, that's what that phrase in the shtar means. So frankly, Gemara, Maskel Ravacha Bar Yaakov, Mi Maidil L'Malchus Yavanim Maninan, Dilma L'Yitzias Mitzrayim Maninan. How do we know that we're counting to the Malchus Yavan? Maybe, how do you know that in this shtar they were counting to the Malchus Yavan? Maybe they were counting to Yitzias Mitzrayim, which was exactly 1,000 years before the Malchus Yavan, and they obviously just left out the thousands column. So how do you know that when it was 6 years off, that it's a shtar that was written on time, and he was just cheshbening the Malchus Yavan differently? Maybe he was counting from Yitzias Mitzrayim, v'shavke la'alfa kama, and he left out the thousands column, v'nakte alfa basra, v'haimu ucharhu, and therefore there's no other way of explaining it other than saying that it's a shtar mu'uchar. I mean, if he was counting to the Malchus Yavan, you could say, okay, maybe it's not a shtar mu'uchar, he just counted differently based on that six-year discrepancy. But if he's counting from Yitzias Mitzrayim, so then you can't say that he counted differently. There's only one Yitzias Mitzrayim. So then it would have to be Shtar Mu'uchar. So Rav Nachman B'Gola in Mon Mel Malchi Yavanim B'Lvad, because no one counts that way. In Gulas, the minog was that they always counted for Malchi Yavan. They never counted to Yitzias Mitzrayim. So that's how we know. And that's how we know that it couldn't have been to Yitzias Mitzrayim. So who saw the Chuy Kaman Chile? So he originally thought that they didn't mean that as a real statement. They were just trying to reject his kasha. But Nafak Dak V'Ashkach. But then he went and he found that in fact Tanaim said this way. D'Tanya B'Gola In Mon El Malchei Yavanim B'Lvad. That in Gola they only counted to Malchei Yavanim. That it wasn't really iffy about what they were counting toward. And that's where Tosos's main diuk really comes from. That if that's the minute, that's what everyone counts from. Then that's self understood. You don't need to even specify in the shtar. Amar Ravina Masnisa Nami Deka, and our Mishnah is also Meduik that way. Ditnan, not our Mishnah, but the Mishnah in Mishnah Mesach Rosh Hashanah, the very first Mishnah Mesach Rosh Hashanah. Bechad B'Nisan Rosh Hashanah L'Malachim L'Regalim. The Mishnah says that the first day of Nisan is Rosh Hashanah for Malachim and for Regalim. V'Arminin L'Malachim L'Mai Hilchzim. He said L'Mai Nafgamina that it's Rosh Hashanah for kings. And what do they celebrate, a separate Rosh Hashanah? What does that mean that it's Rosh Hashanah for kings? So Amar Rav Chisda L'Shtaros. When we're writing Shtaros, it's been this. this many years since the king has taken over. So when does it become the second year of the king? Right? So the Echad B'Nisan is the Rosh Hashanah. That's where the year changes for the king. We don't count it based on the day that, you know, 365 days from the day that he took over. We count it as based on a particular day that's chosen as Rosh Hashanah, which happens to be Echad B'Nisan. Utznan, and we also learned to the Mishnah over there, Be'echad B'Tishrei, Rosh Hashanah L'Shanim L'Shmitin, that the first day of Tishrei is a Rosh Hashanah for years, and for Shemitin, Vamrina L'Shanah L'Mayhilch. So what does it mean? It's the first, it's the Rosh Hashanah for years. Vamrav Chista L'Shtaros. It means L'Shtaros, that when you're writing Shtaros, you should know that the year changes in Tishrei. So Kasha Shtaros Adadi. But wait a second, we just said that when you're writing Shtaros and you want to count how many years it's been since the king took over, it's Nisan that the year changes, not Tishrei. Mishanin and Kalam Malchei Yisrael, Kalam Malchei of the Chavim. That's a big. That's the difference, is whether you're counting to the years of a Jewish king or the years of a non-Jewish king. According to the, if you're counting for a non-Jewish king, you count from Tishrei, which was Bria Sa'olam, which was when all of humanity came into being. And when you count from a Jewish king, you count the most significant date in Jewish history, which is Minisan, which is the month of Geula for Klal Yisrael, the birth of Klal Yisrael. Nowadays, we count from Tishrei. So he says, look, if it were true that they were counting from Yitzias Mitzrayim, then they should have cheshbened it based on Nisan, because that's Yitzias Mitzrayim. So you see, Allah Shmamina L'Malchei Vanamanin and Shmamina. So you see clearly in this Maisa what had to have happened was that they were really counting from the Malchei Vanam. They were not counting from Yitzias Mitzrayim, and that's evidenced by the fact that they were counting from Tishrei, and not that our minhag is to count from Tishrei and not to count from Nisan. Fine. The Mishnah went on to say the various Yomei Ayid of the Ovdei Kochavim, the various Yomei Ayid, the various days of non-Jewish holidays that we have to be careful about doing transactions with the Goyim in advance of those holidays. So we said one of the days was Yom Ginusya Shel Malchayim, the Yom Ginusya of their kings. So ask the Gemara, Mai V'Yom Ginusya Shel Malchayim, what does that mean? What is a Yom Ginusya of their kings? Amar of Yehuda, Yom Shema Amidim Bo the Chav Mes Malkam. It's the day that they establish a new king, that they appoint a new king. Vatanya Yom Ginusa Vi Yom Shema Amidim Bo Es Malkam. But the Braisa that expounds on the Mishnah says that both the Yom Ginusya and the day that they appoint a new king are both special holidays, but if they're the same day, how can you list them as two separate days? So Lokasha Hadi Day Hadi Bray. No, there's a difference. There's one where they establish a brand new king, and one where they establish a king whose father was the king. Right, where they're establishing the son of the king to be the next king. That's what Rashi says in the first wide line. Kshishema Midin Ben Melech Bechaye Aviv, when the son is taking over while the father is still alive. Lachziko b'malucha, to show that this malchus is very strong, that it's staying in the family. Samachav, then the father is happy. Va'osos yom ayin, and they make a big celebration, a big holiday out of that day. So that's also a day that we have to be careful not to do certain transactions within 3 days of that holiday. So frek the gemara umi mukmi malka bar malka. But do the Romans really have that practice of allowing a son to take over for a father as the king? Is that really a Roman practice? V'atani Rav Yosef, hinei katan asaticha bagayim. Pasuk says, I am making you the small, a small one amongst the nations. And we darshan she'in moshivin melech ben melech, that they're unable to have a melech take over who's the son of the previous king. And bazoyata ma'od, they're considered a disgrace. She'in lehen loksa, and why are they a disgrace? Why are the Romans a disgrace? Because they don't have any writing or language. What does it mean they don't have any writing or language? How do they communicate without writing or language? So Rashi says, Loksav lo lashon means that they didn't have their own writing and language. Rather, they took it from other people. They had all their books, the way they wrote, and their whole handwriting, their whole style, all came from other nations. They didn't have their own unique way of doing things. If you look at Tosos doesn't like that. Tosos, Pirsa Kuntros, every nation that rose after the Dara Flaga took their language from somewhere. They took it from somewhere else, right? It's America also not a nation, because we obviously don't have our own language and writing. We clearly took it from England, right? So is that such a terrible thing that they don't have a language that they came up with on their own? No one does. If you trace the history of languages, it all goes back to the Dar HaFlaga, and any nation that rose after that always took their language from someone else. So what's the big bizayin that they didn't have their own language? So says Tosfos, L'kaf Pirushri, Ksav Lashon Chashuv, Shamalachim Mishtamshin Boke, and Chachmas Yevanis, that they didn't have a unique, higher level, more dignified kind of language that they used specifically in royal circles, that the way the king spoke is the way everybody else spoke. It wasn't the way the king wrote his royal edict was the way anyone else would write a letter to his friend. They didn't have any higher level of language. Like Chachmas Yevanis is a much higher level of language. So that's how he wants to suggest. Okay, says Gemara Vayter. So how can you say that the Yom Genusia can't be the day that they established the son as the king, because they didn't do that. That wasn't the practice of the Romans. The Romans didn't have the ability to establish the son as the king. Just one more thing on the language thing. The Yerushalmi and Sota says that there are four Lashonos that are not in Lishtamish ben Ha'olam, that the world it's good for the world to use four Lashonos, four languages. And one of them it mentions is Romi. And the Karmen Eda says that it's good, the Kariv Halavavos, it's a language of love. It's something that softens people up. It's a very soft and beautiful kind of language. So the obvious kasha that everyone asks is, what do you mean? We just said they don't have a ksav and they don't have a lashon. So this is used as a raya to Shitas HaTosfos. According to Rashi, it doesn't make any sense. They don't have their own language. Why would you call it Romi as their language? According to Tosfos, no one had their own language. They had their own dialect, but they didn't have a royal language. But that's a totally different issue, that they didn't have a royal language. The fact that the way they spoke is a soft and an easy way of speaking, that could very, very well be true. Okay, so anyway, back in the Gemara. So what is the Yom Genusia? Elama Yom Genusia, Yom Haleda. It's a birthday. Yom Genusia is a birthday. Vatanya Yom Genusia vi Yom Haleda. But wait a second, the Braisa says that both the Yom Genusia and the birthday of the king are both special holidays for them. So it sounds like they're not the same day. Lo kasha hadi day hadabrei. Again, now we could say that chilek, that one relates to his own birthday, one relates to his son's birthday. Vatanya Yom Genusia shelo, Yom Genusia shel beno, vi Yom Haleda shelo, vi Yom Haleda shel beno. But it says four separate days. His Yom Genusia, his son's Yom Genusia, his birthday, his son's birthday. Sounds like it's not talking about a birthday. Yom Genusia is something independent of a birthday. Elamai Yom Genusia, Yom Shema Amidin Bo Malkam. What is Yom Genusia? The day that they established a new Melech. V'lo kasha, hadidei hadibrei. And it's not a kasha. One relates to himself, one relates to his son. V'kasha lach, the lo mukmi malkam. Meaning basically go back to the first answer we said. But we already rejected that first answer, that it's the day that they established the son as the king. V'kashalach, the lo mukmi malka bar malka, because after all, they're not in the practice of establishing the son of the king to be the next king. Sali de she'ela mukmi, there is an exception to that rule. When they ask permission from the cabinet, then they are allowed to, from the government, then they are allowed to establish a melech ben melech. So if he asked such permission, and he received such permission, so then he would make a holiday on the day that they established the son as the king. Kigon Asvirus bar Antoninus, the malach, just like Asvirus bar Antoninus, who became the king, even though his father was also the king. So the Romans sometimes did have their son actually become the king as well. This is one of the sources in Shas of where we find a birthday being meaningful. That here you have a birthday of the Romans, that they consider that a special day. Now, you don't find too many sources in Shas where a Jewish birthday is meaningful. You find Paro had a birthday that was very meaningful to him. The Romans had a birthday that was meaningful to them. The Yerushalmi says that there was, I forgot which nation, one of the nations would dafka go out and fight, and they would send the warriors whose birthday it was to fight in the front lines because it was a Yom of Mazel for them, that their birthday brings them special Mazel. Right, so you have the birthday usually in the context of non-Jews. The one place where you have it that it relates to Jews that I'm aware of is where the Gemara Maseches Megillah talks about that Haman was planning on the perfect day to come out to destroy the Jewish people, and he thought the day of the Yahrzeit of Moshe Rabbeinu was a day that was going to be particularly bad for the Jews, because it was the day we lost our leader. And the Gemara says, but what he didn't realize is that that was Moshe Rabbeinu's birthday also. So as a birthday, maybe it was something that was positive for him. So you see that on some level that there's significance of a birthday. But the truth is, it's not a raya that there's significance to everybody's birthday. There's a Gemara in Erev and Daf Yud Gimel, which we've discussed several times, where the Gemara discusses, is it Noach lo la'adam shenivra, or Noach lo la'adam shalonivra? Is a person better off having been born, or better off never having been born? So the Gemara says, the Gemara comes to the conclusion, Noach lala'adam shalo nivra. A person would be better off not having been born, unless you're a tzaddik. If a person is a tzaddik, so then it's Noach lo shenivra. So it could be Moshe Rabbeinu's birthday is significant and good and positive, because Moshe Rabbeinu was a great tzaddik. But someone who's not a great tzaddik, so maybe the birthday is not something worthy of celebrating. Adrabah, it's a sad thing that we had to come down into this world and that we didn't get to remain in the purity of the environment of being close to the HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that we had to come into this world. So maybe it's maybe that's something that's not worth celebrating. Okay, so that's a discussion whether a birthday is something that's actually a happy day or not in Judaism. We have a lot of stories of different tzaddikim that did different things on their birthday, made a siyum. The Ksav Sofer, I think they say, made a siyum every year on his birthday. In the Hakdama to his Sefer on Chumash, it says that one year, one of his Talmidim found him. He didn't write the Hakdama, his son wrote the Hakdama in memory of his mother, in memory of the Ksav Sofer's wife. It says that one year, one of his Talmidim found him very sad. He said, what's going on? He said, well, it's my birthday, and I realized I'm already 50 years old, or 52 years old, whatever it was, and look how little I've accomplished in my life. So he uses his birthday as an impetus to reflect and to think about things. So that's probably the Jewish meaning of birthday. I wrote an article on it once, but whatever. Okay, says the Gemara Vayta. Now the Gemara is going to tell us all the stories with Antoninus and Rebbe. Antoninus and Rebbe had a very special relationship that dated back to before they even knew each other. It dated back to when they were first born. Tosos and Amud Beis tells us the beginnings of the story about the story where they made a gzera that you're not allowed to be mal, and Rebbe's parents maled him, and the Kesar found out about it, and asked his mother to come with the baby. He wanted to see if the baby in fact had a mila. And while Rebbe's mother was going through, the Kesar's wife said had her baby there also, and she traded babies with her so that she won't get killed and the baby won't get killed. So she took little Antoninus and gave up little Rebbe for you know, they traded while she went into the Kesar, and the Kesar saw that Taka didn't have a mila because it was Antoninus that he was really looking at. He was looking at his own child. He didn't realize, and he wasn't looking at Rebbe, and then they traded back. So Antoninus, from a very early age, already saved Rebbe's life. They had a very, very close relationship. So the Gemara is going to tell five or six stories about Antoninus and Rebbe. Amalei Antoninus l'Rebbe. So Antoninus said to Rebbe, "Be'inan diyim l'chasvirus b'ri tachosi. I want my son Asvirus to take over my malchus. V'tesavet Tveria kalanya. And another thing that I want the government to approve is I want Tveria to be exempt from taxes, because Tveria was a city of Rabbanim, and Antoninus was very kind to the Rabbanim. He didn't want them to have to pay taxes, but he said, V'yemilu chada avdi, treylo avdi. If I make one request of the government, they'll fulfill that request. I have that much capital with them. But if I make two requests, it's not going to work. So what do I do? So I see gavra arkeve achavre. So Rebbe says, here's what you do. Take one person, ride him on top of the shoulders of another person, v'yavle yona li'ilai biyadeh, and give a yona, a dove, to the guy on top, and tell the guy on the bottom to tell the guy on the top to release the dove. So he was speaking in code because he didn't want to be caught giving advice on how to outsmart the government, because he would get in trouble. So he started speaking in code. So Amar Antoninus was a clever man. He knew exactly what he meant. Shemamina hachi kamerli. So he said, ah, this is what Rabbi's telling me. You're asking from me that you want your son to come and rule instead of you, rule and take over your malchus. So here's what you do. Have your son take over the malchus and tell your son to waive the tax on Tveria. So the waiving the taxes on Talmidei Chachamim is symbolized by releasing the dove. Klal Yisrael is nimshal yona. It's a gemara in several places. Gemara Maseches Beitza, elsewhere, brachos, that Klal Yisrael is nimshal yona. So that's the symbol of Klal Yisrael, of a good Jew, is a yona, the Talmidei Chachamim. So have your son become the king, and you tell your son to make that request. So you have one request, hello, love one request, you'll get both, you'll kill two birds with one stone. So number two, second story. So Antonina said to Rebbe, the chashuvim of Rome are causing me all sorts of trouble. They're causing me all sorts of tsar. So he brought him into the garden, and again, Rebbe wouldn't tell him explicitly what to do, but he wanted to give him a sign of what to do. So every day he would take a radish out from his clothing. So Antonina says, ah, I got it, I know exactly what he's telling me. At k'tol chad chad minayhu. What he's telling me is that I should kill them one at a time. V'lotiskaru b'hu b'kulhu. And I shouldn't just make a massacre of all of them. Meaning these guys that are bothering me, if I were to make a big massacre of them, it's going to be a big deal, it's going to be a big problem for me. So rather what I should do is pick them off one by one. Slowly but surely. V'leimalei l'meimer b'hadya. So frankly, the Gemara, why didn't Rebbe just tell him that? Why does he have to take radishes? And what's the point? So amar shami chashuvei romi umitzaru le. Because Rebbe was afraid that the Chashuvei Romi would hear about it and they're going to cause him tsar. So why didn't he whisper it? And then the Romans won't hear about it. So Mishum Duchsiv, Ki Of Hashemayim Yoluch Hasakol. No, you don't even whisper things. The walls have ears, right? Yeshos Naim Lakotel. You don't say things that that you don't want to be heard, even if you're saying them privately, even if you're saying them quietly. And this is a good lesson, right? Even if you whisper them, you never know how things are going to get heard. Just one private email that you send to a friend and just gets forwarded and forwarded, and that's it. So things get things get out. So these people have to be careful with how we speak. Number three, have a third story. Havale Ahu Barta Deshmagira, that Antoninus had a daughter and her name was Gira. Ka'avdi Yisura, she did something bad. What did she do? Rashi says Zinsa. She was Mizana. So Shadale Gargira. So he sent Rebbe an herb, a Gargira, a type of Esev, Rashi says, an herb. And what he was saying is, look, I have this daughter who did this thing, that's symbolized by the Gargira herb. Why is it symbolized by the Gargira herb? So Rashi explains, Nimshach Lev Gira Im Hanoafim, that she was Nigreres, she came into this this crowd of adulterers and she participated. So Shadalei Kusbarta. So Rebbe sent him back a coriander. And what was the symbol of the coriander? So Rashi says, Rashi Tosos, let's see Rashi first. Kilomar Rashi says, Shechot Habas, slaughter the daughter. Kusbarta Shte Milos. Kusbarta are two words. Kus is as in kill, destroy, Barta, your daughter. So that was Rebbe's advice. You have to kill her. So Shadalei Karti, so Antonina sent back a leek, Karti, and Karti is a lashon of kares, of being cut off, meaning I should cut off my own family. How could I do that? I don't want to do that. That doesn't sound like good advice. So Shadalei Chasa, so Rebbe sent back a piece of lettuce, chasa, which is lettuce, and he said as a symbol of chas, of having rachmanus, that okay, don't kill her, have rachmanus on her. So that's how Rashi understood the whole give and take. Fractosos, that doesn't make any sense. Rebbe initially says, go kill her. So first of all, why would he say go kill her? Second of all, if he did think that you should kill her, what made him change his mind? That Antonina said, I don't want to? So now it became a bad idea all of a sudden. Oh, okay, fine, so don't. Now, what kind of conversation is that? Tosfos doesn't really make much sense how Rashi has it. So he says, what was Rebbe thinking? That you should kill her? And then Rebbe himself goes and changes his mind? So he was just explaining what she had done. The Gira was a way of saying that's the Targum of Noef and Noefes. That's the same Shoresh as the Targum of the words Noef and Noefes. So you know, so what he was trying to say was that to explain what she had done. So then Shadalei Kusbarta Kasa Al Kolona. So Rebbe sent back a Kusbarta, which means not kill her, not Kusbarta, destroy your daughter. Chasei, cover for her. Try to keep it private. Don't make a big public spectacle out of it. Keep it a private issue. Deal with it quietly. Now, Antoninus didn't realize what Rebbe meant. Antoninus misunderstood Rebbe. There was a miscommunication. He thought he was saying, shecht your daughter. So he sends back the leak and says, kares. I should really kill her. I should wipe her out. So Rebbe said, no, no, you misunderstood me. And Rebbe sends back l'chasla, the lettuce, and he says, no, you're not supposed to go and wipe her out. In the Rambam, in Gershon, Perek Dalet, Halacha Yud Gimel, he writes that in a get, we shouldn't write igeres with a yud, aleph yud gimel resh tav, rather igeres without a yud. You leave out the yud, because he says that if you write it with a yud, people might read it as two words, igeres. And garas means zanisa, that she had znus, right? This is garisa. This is the word that our Gemara is dealing with, right? So it says, so the Rambam says we have to be very careful in the way we write a get, that it shouldn't make it look like that the whole get is al tanai. If she was mezana, then the get is going to be chal. No, it's not a get al tanai. We write igeres without the yud to make it clear that it's only one word of igeres. Fine. Next story of Antoninus. Story number 4. Every day Antoninus would send Rebbe a bag full of gold, and he would put some wheat at the mouth of the bag, at the opening of the bag, so people couldn't tell that it was filled with gold. I don't know if the weight didn't give it away, but I guess somehow it didn't give it away. But it was gold that was lighter, because it was pricha. It was whatchamacallit. It was what's the word? Whatever it was, grated or something. It was whatever it was. Shredded, right. So Amar Luhu, Amtiu Chiti L'Rebbe. So and he would tell his servants, go bring these chitim to Rebbe, bring this wheat to Rebbe. So Amar Le Rebbe Lo Tzarich Nisli Tuva. Rebbe said to him, after a while, you know, I really don't need anymore. I have plenty. Rebbe was a wealthy man. He had everything he needed. So Amar Le Havelu Man De Basreich Diavi Le Basrei Dasu Basreich. So Antonina said, you know, let's be a little more. Let's not be so short sighted. Your children and children's children are going to need this to pay off my children and my children's children when they don't have such a good relationship. So you're gonna. This is good bribe money for the future. And it's going to be useful for those who come out of you. So story number 5. There was a tunnel that went from the house of Antoninus all the way to the house of Rebbe. It's a major discussion in the Achronim how big that tunnel could have possibly been and how many waterways it would have had to have tunneled under. How it's impossible that there would be a tunnel that goes all the way from Rome to Tzipori, that it's impossible that you could have such a tunnel. So they come up with all different sorts of terutzim, that it was when Antoninus was in town and he was closer to Rebbe, whatever it was, but it wasn't, you know, somehow there was a tunnel that went from one house to the other. Kol yom avamaisi treyav, every day Antoninus would go visit Rebbe and he would bring two servants with him. Chad katle ababa debe Rebbe, one he would kill when he got to Rebbe's house, v'chad katle ababa debe se, one he would kill when he got back to his own house, meaning he didn't want anyone to master him, because if it was known that he had this great relationship with Rebbe, it could be a big problem for him. So he didn't want to go out alone, because the melech shouldn't go out alone, but if he left these servants alive, he'd be in big trouble. So Frektosos, wow, what a brilliant idea. So he violates Ritzicha. He kills people every day. That's a horrible thing to do. It's one of the Sheva Mitzvot. Even a Jew's not allowed to kill a non-Jew. So a non-Jew certainly not allowed to kill a non-Jew. So he says, no, he was afraid that they were going to tell the Sarim and that would get him killed. He paskin that they had a din of a rodef, that if they were to remain alive, they would have a din of a rodef. In the Sefer Avodas Avoda, he asks what do you mean? He's the one that made them a rodef by exposing them to this story that happened every single day. If not for him, they wouldn't have been a rodef. So that's a good kasha. Not sure. So Amalei be'inu da'asina lo nishkach kavar kamach. So he would say that at the time that I come, Tosfos also, by the way, has a different answer. Tosfos says odi yishlam shayu borer haminim v'mesoros. He would take those people who are chayv misa anyway. And this would be his way of killing them. So he wasn't killing anyone who didn't deserve to be killed. People who were b'malchus, people who were mastered at other people anyway. So people who deserved to be killed anyway, he would bring them along. So anyway, amle be'inada sinu lo nishkach kever kamach. So Antoninus was very concerned about his privacy when he went to visit Rebbe, so he said, look, whenever I come, make sure that there's no one there with you. So one day he comes, and Rebbe Chanina bar Chama is there. says, I thought we discussed this. When I come, you're not supposed to have anyone there with you. And here's somebody else, another rabbi. Amrle less than Barinish. He says, oh no, he's not human. He's superhuman, this rabbi. He's like a malach. So he's, don't worry, he's not just a man. Amrle, Emile La, who Avda, the Gani Abava, the Kaim Velasius. Antoninus wanted to test just how much of a malach is he. He says, go get the servant that's waiting outside and invite him in. So, knowing full well that he had killed that servant, right? So, Azar Rabbi Chanin Bar Chama, Ashkei Davakat, Rabbi Chanin Bar Chama went and he found that the servant was dead. Amar Hechi Yavit. So he says, what am I supposed to do? What are my options here? If I come back and I tell him, I'm sorry to tell you this, but your servant is dead, well, I don't want to be the bearer of bad news. So, Ashafke Ve'ezel Kamazalzlim Malchusa. Should I just leave him and let it go? Then I'm going to be Mazalzal in the Malchus. So, Boy Rachme Aleva Achi Veshadre. So what did he do? Instead, he davened and he brought him back to life. He did Tchias HaMesim, and then he sent him back. So Amar Antoninus was duly impressed, and he says, Yadana Zuti Dis B'chu Mechai HaMesim. So now what I've seen is even the smaller ones among you are Mechai HaMesim, because as good as this guy is, he's no Rebbe. Meaning Antoninus had a relationship with Rebbe. And so even the smaller of the Talmid HaChachamim is able to be Mechai HaMesim, but still, Miu Be'inad Asina L'Nishkach Inish Kamach. Okay, still, I ask for privacy, please. When I come to visit you in the future, as cool a trick as that was, when I come to visit you in the future, I really like privacy, don't have other people here. So he still wasn't happy about having other people there. Story number six. Every day he would give Rebbe whatever he needed. He would give him food and to drink. When Rebbe would want to climb up onto his bed, Antoninus would lie down next to the bed to be a step stool for Rebbe to step on to get onto the bed. And he would say, come on, step onto me to go on your bed. Rebbe says, I'm very uncomfortable with that. You're a melech. You're not supposed to be mezalzel in the melech like this. Antoninus said, can I at least be your mattress in Olam Haba? And on a different occasion, he said to him, about Olam Haba, am I going to make it there? Is Antoninus said, am I going to make it to Olam Haba? Amrle in. Rebbe says, yes. Amrle vaksiv lo yiyas harech lebeis Esav, but the sarid lebeis Esav doesn't say there's not going to be any remnant of the beis Esav. I'm from the beis Esav. How am I going to make it to Olam Haba? So ba'os of my Esav, that's only if you follow in Esav's footsteps. You don't follow in Esav's footsteps, you're okay. Tani nami hachi lo yiyas sarid lebeis Esav yach lo kol. Tamalam lebeis Esav ba'os of my Esav. I might think anyone from Esav's family. That's why the pasuk says, no, it's only someone who's also Maisa Esav. Armalei Vaksiv, Shama Edom Alchev V'chal Nisiyeha. Doesn't it say that over there in Gehenim is where Edom and all of its Malachim and Nisiyim are going to end up, and I'm a Melech from Edom, so how am I going to make it to Olam Abba? Armalei Malchev V'lo Kol Malachev. Doesn't say all of the kings, it says some of the kings. Kol Nisiyeha V'lo Kol Sarel. It says all of the Nisiyim, not all of the Sarim. What does it mean not all of the kings of Edom are going to end up in Gehenna? Means to exclude Antoninus. He's going to end up in Olam Haba. And who's not who's the Kol Sareha that's not going to end up in Gehenna? That's Ketiyah Bar Shalom. Who is Ketiyah Bar Shalom? Ketiyah Bar Shalom Mai. What was the story with Ketiyah Bar Shalom? So says Gemara, there was a Kesar that hated the Jewish people. So he said to his cabinet, to his advisors, if a person has an injury on his foot, should he just cut it off and then be healthy again? Or should he leave it there and be in pain all the time? Referring to the Jews as like a callus on his foot. So they all said, cut it off, destroy it, and then you'll be happier. So Ketir Barshalom, having been one of the advisors, he says, first of all, you're never going to be successful to wipe them all out. What does the pasuk mean? If it just means the Jews are going to be spread out over the four ruchos, then the pasuk should have said that they would be spread out le arba ruchos, not ke arba ruchos. Elik shem sheyef shalom b'lo ruchos ka. But rather, just as it's impossible for the world to be without the Dalad Ruchas, so too the world will never exist without Klal Yisrael. So you're doomed to failure in this attempt. And also it's bad for your own reputation. They're going to say that you're going to be known as a genocidal maniac. So he says, granted, you're right, but anyone who bests a king has to be killed. When he was being brought out to get killed, so a woman said to him, it's a shame that you don't have a bris milah, you're not going to give him to Olam Haba. Nafal al reisha dralase kata, so he immediately gave himself a bris milah. Amr yehavas michsi, there I've paid my tax, I'm going to go into Olam Haba, chalfas v'avris. Kika shadulei, Amr kol nukseil Rabbi Kiva v'chaverav, and then he sent a message that all of my nechassim should go to Rabbi Kiva and his chaverim. Ratzer Rabbi Kiva v'darash, v'yil aron l'vanav, mechsel aron mechsel l'vanav, that it should be half and half. We see half to me, half to chaverai. Yatza baskel v'amr katir barshal mazum l'chayil maba. Baskel came out and said that katir barchavir was going to Olam Haba. Bacha Rebbe v'amar, yeshkan olam b'shah achas, yeshkan olam b'kama shanim. Here you see a person, an example of someone who is able to be kana Olam Haba in just a single moment. Okay, we'll explain that story tomorrow.